Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
3 o'clock hour on Hawk and Crowder. Josh Appel, filling in for Hawk, Crowder, and Solana. I'm here with Steven. I'm here with Jimmy. The guys, Hawk, Crowder, Solana, will be back tomorrow. We've got the Sugar Bowl kicking off in less than an hour. I'm on the under. Jeremiah Love over receiving yards and Notre Dame to win. I'll probably regret that second one, or the Notre Dame to win. But hey, we'll all find out together.
That's the fun play. That's the fun play.
Look, I dare Gunnar Stockton to play well in his first career start against a really good Notre Dame defense in the college football playoff. I dare him. And if he does, I'll tip my imaginary cap. Thanks to Drew Carter of NBC Sports Boston, voice of the Celtics, and you've seen him on ESPN as well, for joining us in the last segment. And the praise for that interview is pouring in on the text line. This guy is the Fireman Ed of Boston sports. Thanks, Josh. Drew is better than trolling Ben Volen. Why do we have a Celtic fan on South Florida local radio? This Boston guy on the show sucks. How about our Panthers that just bleep slapped the Bruins? Why is this D-bag on the show? Oh, that was a phenomenal segment.
Yeah, he did mention earlier that all the Miami teams stink. Like, I mean, where's the Stanley Cup right now? I believe it belongs to South Florida.
Belongs to South Florida, and of course, he joined us during the last postseason run as well when I was filling in, and I got to tell him that Jim Montgomery at the time was the Bruins coach, Pat Maroon. I gave it to him back then. Don't worry. And of course, the Bruins already had to fire their coach this year. They're on an interim. They haven't played better since then. But, I mean, it's very clear the Panthers wrecked that entire organization, just like they've wrecked the New York Rangers. By the way, Panthers back-to-back at home starting tonight with Carolina, tomorrow Pittsburgh. They're coming off of a really fun win over the Rangers a few days ago, earlier this week. Bob Wischusen, voice of the New York Jets, will join us later this hour. And we'll talk Dolphins-Jets with him. We'll talk college football playoff. He called the Boise State-Penn State game a couple of days ago. And we'll also talk some UM with him because he was on the call for a couple of Canes games this year. I want to know what he thinks about the Cam Ward situation. I want to know how he evaluates the Canes season overall, as someone who has seen them a good bit. And speaking of the Panthers, he's one of the voices for the NHL on ESPN. He'll give his Panthers takes as well. I believe he's calling a Panthers game either in a couple weeks or a couple days. One of the two. I think it's a couple weeks. Earlier, we were talking Dolphins, Pro Bowl, things like that. And one of the guys who we expected to potentially have another Pro Bowl season was a good friend of the Hawk and Crowder show, was Javon Holland. He's going to be a free agent after this season, and he spoke to the media in what could be his final time doing so with the Dolphins. He said, quote, "I would love to be here. It's a great organization. We have a great group of guys in the locker room. It would be dope, but it's ball. Things happen, whatever it may be." He was happy that I was here, or I was happy that I was here, and I had fun in Miami. Now, his agent, David Mulugeta, has negotiated other big deals for several other safeties, Xavier McKinney with Green Bay, Buda Baker with Arizona, Antoine Winfield with Tampa Bay, and then he's also the agent of Derwin James. He represented Christian Wilkins as well. So this is a guy that the Dolphins have dealt with before in negotiations. He's a guy that's very well experienced with other organizations, of course. And, you know, this is such a tough one because the Dolphins have so many needs. They're backed up against the cap. I don't know that Javon Holland is a guy that the Dolphins should be looking to pay that much money to at this point in time, right? I mean, he had the one play that he's made this year. It's literally the one play that he's made was week one, forcing the fumble at the goal line against Jacksonville, which saved the Dolphins from losing that game, right? Like, he has not forced a turnover since. And then in his first three seasons, he's a guy who had what? Five picks, handful of forced fumbles, handful of fumble recoveries. He's a guy that was always around the ball. He was always making plays. Obviously, Dolphins are going up to the Meadowlands this weekend, and he had the 100-yard kick return for a touchdown on the Hail Mary, the Fail Mary, against Tim Boyle and the Jets last Black Friday. So I don't know if it's – he says his knees feel fine. He says he's dealing with separate injuries nagging throughout this season. So I don't know if that's what's at play with Javon Holland, but certainly his season has not been to the standard that we're used to from him. His tackle numbers are down from each of the last few seasons. His passes defended way down this year. So he's just a different player in 2024. And when you're so backed up against the salary cap and you've got to be creative with freeing up money and who to allocate that money to, you other needs, like for me, beefing up the interior of their O-line and maybe getting a bigger weapon on the outside physically, I mean, that to me is a bigger priority than spending big money on a safety, right? Like, you can find guys who fit a scheme for value, whether that's through the draft or in free agency, without having to pay top dollar. Jordan Poyer is not going to be here next year, right? I think the Dolphins are going to be starting two new safeties in 2025. Unless Javon Holland, who's 24 years old, doesn't want to cash in on what somebody else will inevitably pay him. It's another instance where Chris Greer has spotted and found, of course, before this season, talented players in the draft and not been able to hang on to them after that. We already talked about Andrew Van Ginkle, happened with Christian Wilkins, and now it's likely to happen with Javon Holland. Not to say that that's all Chris Greer's fault or because all these are different circumstances, right? Like, could you say, yeah, you could have extended maybe Christian Wilkins the season prior? Maybe that's fair. But if you look at the contract Christian Wilkins got from the Raiders and you see what the Raiders' record is, and Wilkins has dealt with some injury issues himself this year, Dolphins probably better off. They didn't pay that big money to Christian Wilkins. Robert Hunt is another. He has been phenomenal for Carolina this year. That's one of the highest paid offensive lines in the league, and they play like it. And while they have been competitive this year, and it's not necessarily the offense's fault that Carolina had the season they had, their defense is one of, just personnel-wise and performance, one of the worst I've seen in a long time. They've still got four wins, and they paid $100 million to a right guard. Robert Hunt definitely would have helped the Dolphins this year, but he is not a difference maker in the grand scheme of things in win-loss when it comes to talking about paying a guy that much money.
Well, I think
Andrew Van Ginkle is the one.
Yeah, I think this year the defense can't be put to blame for any of this. So when we're bringing up some names here on the defense and guys that we could have had, when you look at big picture here on the whole season, I don't have a problem with the defense. Sure, we missed on the Poyer and we should have kept some guys here, but when I look at this season, I don't point to the defense one bit.
No, and you shouldn't. The one thing I will say, though, and this happens to defenses at least once or twice every year, so I'm not piling on them and saying they are the reason the Dolphins aren't going to make the postseason, but there was that stretch when Tua came back, right? Even against Indianapolis. I mean, they blew a lead against the Colts on the road. They blew a fourth quarter lead against Arizona at home, and the defense gave up, I know, and then in a 61-yard field goal by Tyler Bass, but it was a last-minute scoring drive that they gave up to lose that Buffalo game. So they have had instances like that, but on the whole, I agree with you. I think Anthony Weaver is going to get some head coaching looks this offseason, and they're well-deserved. He's a guy whose name comes up every offseason, and I think the Dolphins would be worse off if they lost Anthony Weaver going into next year. The defense has been really good for them this year. They'll need another performance like they had against the lowly Browns last week when they played the Jets this Sunday. And with that, let's get to our 3 o'clock headlines with Steven Gonzalez.
Headlines brought to you by The Rao Kia. At The Rao Kia, choose from over 500 new Kia models in inventory like the Sportage, Sorento, and Telluride. Remember, when it comes to Kia, the great deals are at The Rao Kia. 3 of the 4 college football playoff quarterfinal bowl games in the books. The fourth will be played today between Penn State and Notre Dame. Notre Dame and Georgia. Penn State awaits the winner of that. The Sugar Bowl, it'll kick off in less than an hour from Caesars Superdome. The Miami Dolphins, they take on the New York Jets on Sunday, 4:25 p.m., with playoff hopes still alive in Week 18 after last week's win in Cleveland against the Browns. Seems like Tyler Snoop Huntley will be the starting quarterback once again after Mike McDaniels announced that the team will be approaching this week in practice with Snoop as QB1. They can pivot to Tua if he is cleared to play on time. Dolphins, they can also use some help from the Chiefs if they take down the Broncos. We rely on Carson Wentz on Sunday. They play at 4:25 as well. If the Dolphins can win against the Jets and the Broncos lose to the Chiefs, the Dolphins will have a wild card spot. The Miami Heat, they got the victory last night at home against the New Orleans Pelicans, 119-108, officially undefeated in 2025. They play again tonight against the Pacers, second night of a home back-to-back from the Kaseya Center. Tip off tonight, 7:30 p.m. Catch all the action, starting with preheat at 6:15 right here on 560 WQAM. And the Florida Panthers, they face off with the Carolina Hurricanes tonight at home, 7 p.m. from the Amerant Bank Arena. Panthers trying to start a new win streak. They're coming off a 5-3 win versus the New York Rangers on Monday. They're looking to make it 2 in a row tonight. Now it's time for your weather, sponsored by Nemesman and Dover Law Firm, youraccidentattorneys.com. Free consultations 24/7 at 866-954-MORE. 76 degrees outside, mostly sunny. 5-mile-an-hour northeast winds, 0% chance of rain for the rest of the day.
Bob Wischusen of ESPN. He's also the voice of the New York Jets on radio. He'll join us in the next segment. I just realized, by the way, I should have just realized this. I think Steven actually pointed this out in the last commercial break. I am being super antagonistic of our listeners today. Between Drew from Boston and Bob Wischusen, the voice of the Jets. Man, kudos to everybody
talking.
I will say this, though. I don't foresee Bob being as big of a troll to all of you as Drew was in the last segment. But guess what? We'll all find out together. Coming up next on Hawk and Crowder, it's Bob Wischusen joining the show.
This is the Hawk and Crowder Show.
Soldier Boy, that dude wasn't in the Army.
Hawk and Crowder.
All right, welcome back. 3 o'clock hour, Hawk and Crowder. Josh Appel filling in for Hawk, Crowder, and Solana. Excellent song choice by Jimmy coming back in this segment. Pleased to be joined by the voice of the New York Jets, one of the play-by-play voices of college football and the NHL on ESPN as well, Bob Wischusen on the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441, between Hollywood and Sheridan, toyotaofhollywood.com. I think we're still trying to locate Bob. I thought we had him on, but I think his call just dropped, which is always fun, right as we're starting a segment. But that does give us an opportunity to relate to you that Jalen Milroe, quarterback at Alabama, who on Tuesday when we were on the air, turned the ball over 3 times in their first 3 possessions against Michigan in Alabama's loss, he's declared for the NFL draft. How about that? It's a really weak quarterback class this year. After Cam Ward, after Shedeur Sanders, there's a big question mark on who QB3 is. And there are a lot of folks that think Jalen Milroe might be QB3. All right, so we've got Bob Wischusen on the line, voice of the New York Jets, Dolphins, Jets this weekend. Bob, thanks for taking the time. Really appreciate you.
No problem, Phil. I heard Benny and the Jets, and then all of a sudden the call was gone. So I'm glad to be back.
Well, I'm happy that you are back. Sorry about our technical difficulties. Start with this Dolphins-Jets game this weekend. Dolphins preparing to start Tyler Huntley. I'm assuming Aaron Rodgers is playing for the Jets, although he took himself out of the game last week during that blowout. We're very in the weeds down here, obviously, about the Dolphins this season and kind of what a roller coaster ride it's been. But I'm curious what the outside perspective is on Mike McDaniel and on this Dolphins team this season.
I lost there for a second. The outside perspective on the Dolphins is?
Yes. Yeah.
Probably the generally the same, right? I mean, incredibly talented, like fastest team in the NFL potentially, can beat anyone. But there's still a perception that they seem to struggle when they punch up in their weight class or when they go outside and it's cold, which is a bad thing for the playoffs because – if they make the playoffs, they're going to probably be outside where it's cold somewhere. You know, there's at least a high chance of probability of that. So, you know, I'm curious to see how they play this Sunday because they're the team that needs the game. And, you know, the Jets right now, you know, who knows? I have never questioned their effort. Their effort has been top-notch, and they've been out of the playoff race for a while. They will probably want to play really hard last Sunday of the season, knowing that this is like their last kick at the can. But having said that, if the Dolphins are able to take a lead, you know, I mean, again, they're the team that should be desperate for the game. And the Jets are sensing that their season is coming to an end. So we'll see.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to ask you about that. I saw the DJ Reed quotes after last Sunday's game where he basically said, yeah, I'm looking forward to being a free agent. You mentioned that you don't think the effort level is going to go down, even though it's their last game, and obviously they've been playing for nothing. But generally speaking, the vibe around the Jets right now, and really since the beginning of the season, has not been great. But you still think that they're going to, I don't know if that lack of effort is the right phrase for it, but when a guy like DJ Reed is saying things like that, you still think that they're going to be fully checked in on Sunday trying to play spoiler?
Yeah, I mean, even this past weekend, 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, I think they were losing 12-0, and then the wheels came off, which can absolutely happen when you can't score, and they couldn't score. You know, so, like, are they mentally in a great place? Who would be, right? They've won four games. But if you look at their season, there's really only been a couple of games that have really gone sideways. The Dolphin game's a great example. Like, they were dead. The playoffs were out. They really had no chance to make the postseason when they went down to Miami. Tua played in the game, and on the road, they took the Dolphins to overtime and probably should have won, right? I mean, they had a sequence at the end of the game.
Yeah.
The game probably never should have gone to overtime, right? Like, if Devontae Adams stays in bounds, the Jets probably kick a game-winning field goal and beat them on the road. So, if you look at their losses, and this includes a bunch of losses when it was really already a done deal that they were not going to be a playoff team, they have been gut-punch one-score losses at the ends of games. So, yeah, they've played hard all the way through. I mean, I've seen teams check out. I've seen teams that, you know, have made business decisions at the end of seasons, and this team hasn't been one of them, even this past week against Buffalo. Sauce Gardner, Quinnen Williams, Aaron Rodgers, Morgan Moses, like just to name a few. Those guys were all on the injury report and were all listed as questionable halfway through the week, and they all played. Now, there are lots of guys where if they were questionable, you know, and a team that was 4-10 or 4-11 might have been like, all right, you know, I'm worse than questionable. How about I be doubtful and how about I not play this week because – what's the point? They don't seem to have that attitude at all.
The Dolphins' offense has a little bit of a different dynamic when Tyler Huntley is running it, which feels like a ridiculous sentence to say, but he does have an element to his game that Tua Tagovailoa just does not. Generally speaking, how has this Jets defense handled quarterbacks who are mobile this year and quarterbacks who maybe play that style that Tyler Huntley does?
Yeah, not great. Kyler Murray ripped off big runs against them. Obviously, Josh Allen seems to do that to everyone, but he certainly hurt the Jets with his legs when they played him. But having said that, I still think that they would take their chances with a Tyler Huntley quarterbacked offense rather than Tua because
right.
of the command and the accuracy and the timing of all of it. You know, I mean, I don't think they're going to be as worried about Tyler Huntley's legs as they would be of, like, Hill and Waddle if Tua were the one throwing it to them. So,
right.
But if Tua's not playing, then that's certainly an advantage for them.
If I told you that when the Rodgers acquisition happened, that these 2 years would go the way they have, what would you have said to me?
I would have said you're crazy. I would have said that makes no sense, right? I mean, there's nothing statistically. Well, I would say anybody can get hurt. So last year, freak injury, what are you going to do, right? I mean, and I don't know. I mean, it's an Achilles injury to a guy who was, you know, going on 40 years old. So maybe not that freak of an injury. It's just the dice you roll when you have a 40-year-old quarterback. This year, it looks like he's going to get through the entire season starting all the games. So it was a freak injury. But, you know, that not so much. To me, it's this year that's obviously the stunner. It's, and, you know, go through Aaron Rodgers' career, and there's just nothing to suggest that he would ever play a full season of football and have that team be completely out of it with, you know, 4 or 5 weeks to go in a season. And, you know, and a coach and general manager get fired like midway through the season, basically, for, you know, the failures of a team that Aaron Rodgers quarterbacks and is in charge of. So I know they're all, to a man, you know, shocked and devastated that the year has gone the way that it's gone. Because, yes, it's the last thing anyone would have seen coming.
Well, the Dolphins, they need to win this Sunday against the Jets and a Broncos loss in order to make the postseason. We'll see if the Jets can avenge that close loss down here in Miami from a few weeks ago. I want to shift gears now to college football. You were on the call for a couple of Canes games this year. And a lot of people down here have had some trouble kind of evaluating what this season actually was for them, right? Because in a season where you win 10 games, that's not a bad season. But when you look at it from the perspective of, well, their main objectives were, one, win the ACC or at least make the conference title game. That didn't happen. And then obviously, because of that, they didn't make the college football playoff with a Heisman finalist at quarterback. How do you evaluate this Canes season and what it meant for the program?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, to lose, and especially to lose to Syracuse the way they did at the end of the year, you know, they win that game, they're in the playoff. And also when you're sitting home and you're watching a couple of teams like Indiana, you know, even, you know, the game that I had, you know, you've got a Heisman finalist, you know, the number two Heisman guy in Ashton Gentry, but he's a running back and doesn't control the game as much for Boise as a quarterback would. You know, SMU making it obviously out of the ACC, but struggling as much as they did against Penn State on the road. You're probably sitting there thinking, you know, a quarterback has so much more to do with the game, and you had arguably the best. I mean, there's, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe Shedeur Sanders goes higher than Cam Ward in the draft, but in terms of college production this past year, who was better than Cam Ward? So you're probably sitting there thinking, boy, we really would have liked our puncher's chance in one of those games, knowing right. that we have the guy that has the ball in his hands half the game and might be able to go out there and sling it around and win it for us. Having said all that, the fact that Miami has gotten back to the point where they are at least one of those teams in that discussion is a great thing, and it's a great thing for college football. Right? I mean, I kind of grew up high school through college in my early working days in Miami through the glory years of the U. Right? Like those, I mean, they were the Jimmy Johnson through the Dennis Erickson through Butch, through all of those years where every single year they were as relevant to what was going on with the national championship as Georgia and Alabama have been over the past handful of years. You know, it's great to have them back at least you know, playing in these big, highly ranked, you know, high profile matchups. And the more of those, the better. So I guess just a college football fan, I would look at it positively that, and as an announcer going forward, I hope I get more Big U games because they're great. It's just, it's great to have that logo back mattering in college football at this level, because it always seemed like it should have been that way. Well, I mean, Miami never should have not mattered at this level. It's just one of those programs.
So, right.
You know, I can certainly understand why a Miami fan this year was angry or upset that they missed the playoff and didn't get their shot at it, because, you know, you could certainly see that they would have had every bit as much of a chance, if not maybe more so than a couple teams that made it and didn't play so well, to have Cam Ward go out there and sling it around and maybe pull off an upset.
Yeah, and I think that's the most frustrating part, is that they had that guy. They had the Cam Ward. They had the quarterback. And who knows if they'll be able to, I don't think they're going to be able to find that type of production. I mean, who can, in replacing him after this year? And that kind of leads me to my next question, because of what we saw in their bowl game. Cam Ward only played the first half, and then there was this big swarm of criticism over that decision. Part of why the program did that, they wanted to get a look at Emery Williams, see if he was someone they could rely on to maybe replace Cam next year. But the main takeaway from a lot of folks was that Cam Ward was wrong and the program was wrong and he was selfish and all this stuff. And the whole thing just felt like it was blown way out of proportion. What did you make of this whole Cam Ward sitting out the second half after playing the first half and breaking the record? How did you feel about how all that went down?
I guess it didn't bother me nearly as much as it apparently bothered a lot of other people. I don't know. Because I have called a lot of not only bowl games, but big bowl games, like the Flower and Fruit New Year's Day 6 bowl games, where the NFL level players in those games on those teams opted out altogether. Right? I mean, I called a Michigan Florida Peach Bowl a few years ago, where Michigan had like 7 or 8 NFL guys in the game, and they all opted out the game. Like, across the board, they all sat. They just, you know, I don't know. I guess you don't get credit for partial credit if you're Cam Ward. I guess you're not allowed to just play half the game. Because it's funny. If he had just flat out opted out and put one of those, you know, big social media posts up thanking the U, thanking the fans, then everybody probably would have been like, okay, yeah, Cam, you had a great year, and we totally understand. Right, you didn't make the college football playoff. You don't want to risk injury. You're going to be a top 5 pick. Thanks for the memories. And he probably wouldn't have gotten any flack, because he would have done what dozens of other players do every year and will continue to do if they don't make the playoff. And yet he plays half a game and gets like 10 times as much flack as it seems like he probably would have gotten if he would have just opted out altogether. So that's why it didn't really bother me. I mean, I've called some of those games where I would have killed to have the Cam Wards of some of those other games play a half. Man, at least give me a half of top-notch football to call before you call it a career and backup quarterback comes in, rather than starting the game with the third stringer at quarterback because everybody's in the portal or everybody's gone to the NFL. So it didn't really strike me as like some type of offensive move when, I mean, every year in these games that aren't playoff games, you've got guys bailing altogether on their teams.
Right. And it's not like Miami as a program didn't have this plan put together. I'm pretty sure that Cam Ward was only supposed to play one quarter, ended up playing a full half. I'm fairly certain the program knew what the plan was going into the game. Games with Louis Riddick. Go ahead.
If Mario didn't have a problem with it, if his teammates didn't have a problem with it, should everybody else have had that much of a problem with it? I guess that would be my question.
Right, exactly. We're on the same page as far as that. You work with Louis Riddick. You mentioned, you know, Cam Ward could be a top 5 pick. You mentioned Shedeur Sanders earlier this year. We just saw, maybe not a well-kept secret, but that Jalen Milroe is declaring for the draft. Just in talking with Lewis Riddick and maybe other talent evaluators that you've worked with or spoken to this year, what's kind of the consensus on that trio of guys? Because, I mean, you saw Drew Aller in the Fiesta Bowl the other night, and while that, you know, the counting stats, the completion percentage wasn't great, for me, if Drew Aller's leaving Penn State and not coming back this year, like you said, I know the deadline's not been met yet, so he still could change his mind. But for me, like, Drew Aller feels like a guy who could go QB1 even in this current class if he left now. What from your conversations do you hear about Jalen Milroe and kind of what the order you think these guys are going to go in?
I don't know that there is a consensus. I think this is one of those years with quarterbacks. Like, we were led to believe that Drew Aller is coming back to Penn State. Now, you're right. I mean, leading up to the draft, anybody can change their mind, but he has at least already publicly announced his intention to return. So he would not be in this discussion, at least right now. So I would say, I mean, really, it seems like it's Shedeur Sanders and Cam and then the rest of the group falling in behind them. I don't know if Quinn Ewers re-entered the chat with a couple of the throws that he made yesterday, because those were some big pressure throws with the game on the line, but he had basically dropped, you know, that there really wasn't much competition, it seems, right at the top of the draft for Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. But having even said that, I haven't, of the guys that I've talked to, even gotten much of a consensus from them between A, Cam or Shedeur, and B, how good people actually think the two of them are. Are they even top of the first round worthy, or is this just one of those drafts where, you know, teams might go in a different direction or look to trade out because they don't believe that these two guys, you know, are the next true franchise quarterbacks to turn your team over to. Normally, as you get to the draft, no matter what anybody throws out there about quarterbacks, if there are quarterbacks in the draft, they go high. Right? Like, if there's a couple out there that are at least possibly franchise quarterbacks, somebody falls in love with them and goes and gets one of them. For Cam specifically, there seems to be a lot of difference of opinion. Some people see Cam as the, like, I got this, you know, natural, comfortable, eyes downfield while chaos is happening around them, rocket for an arm. Yes, I want to go get that type of a franchise quarterback. Others see him as someone who might be Jameis Winston, might be like an interception machine, because he's someone that takes a lot of chances. And rather than taking the easy throw, is always looking to make the home run across his body, middle of the field throw, you know, to try and make the big play every play. And you worry, is that always going to be his decision-making? Can we coach that out of him? And if we can't,
right,
you know, then we've got an interception machine on our hands. That, you know, again, beauty in the eye of the beholder, right? There will definitely be a general manager that will fall in love with everything that Cam Ward brings and can do. But I guarantee there'll be one or two that will be hesitant to pick him because they'll watch him take all those chances in games and say, ooh, you know, I don't know if I want to sign up for that. So I'll be as curious to see where these guys go as anyone. I mean, you know, my team, highly possible that they're going to be, A, in a position to maybe take Cam, and B, in need of a quarterback as well. So, you know, he could end up as a Jet. Not certainly based on whatever the results are this Sunday, not out of the realm of possibility. If the Jets pick somewhere in that 4th through 6th range, 4th through 7th, could Cam drop to them in that range? Yeah. I mean, that's certainly possible. And, you know, but then, like, the Jets haven't hired a general manager. So I have no idea what that Jets manager is going to think of him. So, yeah, there's a lot of balls in the air with these guys and where they're going to go.
I know the Venn diagram of Canes fans and Jets fans. I know of one person that overlaps with those two fandoms. I imagine the percentage is very, very small. And the idea that Canes fans are going to have to potentially see Cam Ward maybe in a Jets uniform just for the chaos, I might be kind of rooting for that. Bob Wischusen of ESPN calls the NHL, calls college football. He's also the voice of the New York Jets on radio. I want to squeeze one hockey question into you. I know you're heading to UBS Arena. You've got the call of Maple Leafs and Islanders tonight, ESPN Plus, Hulu exclusive. The Panthers, are they still the favorite to come out of the East in your eyes? And if they are, who has the best shot at dethroning them? Obviously, you have Toronto tonight, but Washington's been great this year. The Devils seem to be a lot better than last year, obviously. Carolina is as good as they've ever been. So who do you kind of see jockeying there as the team that could dethrone the Panthers in the Eastern Conference?
Great question. I do think the Panthers are still the most complete team. So, I mean, how could you not lean towards the defending champions when they've shown that they can do this? And they play, you know, all the way through all four lines, they play playoff hockey, right? Like, they can go get the puck deep and go win it and be physical, but they've also got the skill to, you know, score in a variety of ways. They've got the most underrated defenseman in the NHL in Gustav Forsling. They have a Vezina-level goaltender. You know, you want to start checking those boxes. They check all the boxes. The most impressive other team talent-wise that I have seen is the Devils. They are explosive. They are incredibly fast. I haven't seen Jesper Bratt and Jack Hughes do it on the Panthers Stanley Cup playoff level stage yet. You know, the problem the Rangers have had, even in the playoffs, not so much this year. This year they're just a disaster. But the problem they have had is they have had the incredibly gifted, talented offensive players that aren't physical enough and get taken out of their game in the playoffs a bit. When the power play isn't the number one thing you can lean on. The Devils right now have the number one power play in the NHL. But you got to be good 5-on-5. And also, can Jacob Markstrom match a Bobrovsky or a Vasilevsky or a Swayman, like one of these guys that we have seen win big playoff series for their teams in the past? I don't know that he's going to be able to be that good. But if Markstrom plays the way he did a few years ago for Calgary, and he has been, generally speaking, that good so far this year, and if, you know, Jack Hughes and Jesper Bratt can do it 5-on-5 in the postseason, then, yeah, I would say the Devils are probably the biggest threat to the Panthers. But if I had to pick one team in the East right now, I would pick the Panthers. I still think their net always seems to be a question. And
right, and now Austin Matthews.
When he comes back and he get all the way there, that's a good question, too.
Right, yeah, Austin Matthews said yesterday he's not even sure he'll be back to 100% at all this season or if it's something that he'll have to address in the offseason. Bob Wischusen, and he'll be on the call of Maple Leafs and Islanders on the ESPN Plus Hulu exclusive in the NHL. He's also the voice of the New York Jets. You watched him call the Fiesta Bowl the other day between Boise State and Penn State. He's one of the best in the business. Appreciate your time, Bob. Have a great show tonight and a great call this weekend.
All right, guys. Be good.
Bob Wischusen joining us here on Hawk and Crowder. Back with more after this.
This is the Hawk and Crowder Show.
I was a little late coming back here. Jimmy sent me out to the corner and get him a cigarette.
Hawk and Crowder.